You're listening to a special pre-recorded edition of The Naked Scientists with Meera Senthilingam and Dave Ansell.
This week we're discussing some of the highlights of our past year in engineering as we've travelled to numerous academic institutions and companies across the UK.
Now earlier we heard from friend of the show, Professor Hugh Hunt from the University of Cambridge, giving us an insight into the workings of the retroreflectors, or cat's eyes, we see lining our roads. But Hugh is a multi-talented engineer, and he's recently been involved in a project that looked into the engineering behind the famous Dam Busters bouncing bomb used during World War II.
And we joined him alongside the River Cam in Cambridge to find out what's involved in designing something on a large scale to bounce on water.
So Barnes Wallace in 1943 came up with this great scheme for blowing up German dams, having a bouncing bomb, bouncing on the water, nestling up against the dam, dropping down beside the dam to a depth of about 20 feet and then blowing up just at the right height. It was successful, although there were quite a lot of lives lost, but the technology was really quite fascinating and hasn't been reproduced since 1943.
Well, to find out more about the workings, I guess, of this bouncing bomb, we've come along to the River Cam. It's a beautiful sunny day. Dave, why are we here?
One of the things which inspired Barnes Wallace to design the bouncing bomb was essentially just skipping stones on a river. So normal skimming stones, you essentially get a nice flat stone, you get very, very low towards the water, and you attempt to throw it as hard as you can on a very, very flat trajectory, and with any luck, when it hits the water, it will skip.
Yep, so yours has just skipped twice over, which is actually quite hard to accomplish.
So what's happening is the stone hits the water at a slight angle. When it hits the water, it gains lots and lots of lift and it bounces off and it skips a few times.
And so, Hugh, is this basically the principles behind a bouncing bomb?
Barnes Wallace was sort of inspired by skimming stones, but actually he figured out with his kids in his back garden that he could actually get marbles, ordinary round glass marbles to bounce. The great thing about something round is that it can contain a reasonable volume. It is predictable, but actually there's an even better shape than being spherical. If you have something which is cylindrical, then you even fit more explosive power into the given space in the bomb bay of your Lancaster bomber.
And well, Hugh, this bouncing bomb is something that you set about recreating recently. So firstly, I guess, what do you even have to consider when designing or engineering a bouncing bomb?
First thing I suppose you have to do is to decide what size you're going to do it. Barnes Wallace had one which was about a metre and a bit in diameter. We went for half the size. Then we had to design how to fit it underneath a plane. We had to design how to make it spin, and that was one of the things that Barnes Wallace found was really important, that this thing had to spin. And we had to figure out how to release it at the right time, at the right height. And actually we had to make ourselves a target. And that was quite interesting because Barnes Wallace had German Nazi dams as the target. Well, we built our own dams.
Well, to see how you set about coming up with your design, and we've got a variety of bits and bobs around us. So we've got cricket balls here, we've got cylinders representing different scales of your bouncing bomb. So firstly, these cricket balls, what have you used these for?
Yeah, well, we started off on a small scale just with cricket balls. We used a cricket ball bowling machine in the Jesus Green swimming pool. And we wanted to figure out how we could make cricket balls bounce. And we worked out the height and the angle and the speed, and that was great.
So how fast were you actually having to fire these cricket balls to get them to bounce satisfactorily?
Well, the ordinary sort of lightweight ones, we could get them to bounce at maybe sort of 30 or 40 miles an hour. But the heavier ones, once we started putting weight in them, we had to get maybe up to 50 or 60 miles an hour. Except if you put backspin on them. And this was a sort of eureka moment for Barnes Wallace back in the 1940s.
So why is backspin, I guess, so important? And how does it have a beneficial effect then to the movement?
Well, backspin is really important when the bomb goes through the air. Now, if you think of Roger Federer and his topspin makes the ball dip over the net really fast. So you can imagine put topspin on a spinning bomb, it would just dive into the water and just sink. But backspin sort of hovers over the net, and so you can make it skim at a much shallower angle onto the water.
So the important thing is the angle at which the bomb hits the water, and if that's too steep it just digs straight in, but if you can get that shallow enough it skips.
That's absolutely right, Dave, and if you have this thing called Magnus lift, the Magnus effect is what it's called, you can get a really nice sort of shallow angle onto the water, and we've got a really good demo of how that works.
So here to actually show us really just how important this is Hilary Costello, one of Hugh's PhD students. Now, Hilary, you've got two polystyrene cups there that have both been taped together at their bottom ends. And then you have an elastic band which has been cut open.
Well, basically, this is our cylinder or our bomb, is this sort of cylindrical polystyrene cup thing that we've stuck together. And then if you just wrap the string around, you can give it some either backspin or topspin, depending on how you throw it. So if I just wrap the elastic band around the cylinder or the polystyrene cups.
Okay, so you've wrapped that round now, so there's not much elastic band left.
Yep. And then if I just pull the elastic band with my thumb so that the cups go forward when I release it, it gives it some backspin, and you can see that it sort of hovers in the air before coming down.
So that actually hovered for about a good metre away from you.
Yeah.
Now, you're just wrapping the elastic round again, but in the opposite direction, so that you'll have topspin.
I actually just hold it from the top, so that it has topspin. And then when I release it...
That pretty much went straight down to the floor.
Yeah, exactly. So the backspin gives it a little bit of lift, and the topspin gives it a downwards force.
And Hugh, so why do we need this backspin and for it to hover, I guess, at quite a constant height?
Well, the idea really is to get the angle as shallow as possible. When you're skimming stones, we all know that you need to get down as low as you can, close to the water. But one of the problems that flying at night with gunfire and all this stuff, you really don't want to be flying very, very close to the water. So Barnes Wallace and his pilots really figured they couldn't fly lower than 60 feet. The backspin enabled them to get a shallower angle of bounce onto the water.
So this basically stabilises it, because otherwise after the first bounce it would start to tumble and it would go anywhere and stop skipping.
You've got a scaled model here. So it's a cylinder, it's got 180 millimetres, so 18 centimetre diameter.
Yeah, and this is what we used to do some tests. In fact, it was in the Cotswolds. We got a gas cannon to fire this cylinder at high speed across the lake, and we had to make it spin. And you can sort of see that. So if I toss this up in the air with no spin,
It's rotated.
It turned over very quickly. But once I put spin onto it...
It smoothly just comes straight back down
exactly,
to your hand.
It's the spin stabilised, and that was very important.
So what scales were you working to when you recreated your bouncing bomb?
So we've got the cricket balls here. We've got our 20-centimetre diameter scale model here. We've also got our... 60 centimetre diameter bomb. It's actually a plastic replica because the real one was really heavy.
So you're going from lots of different scales. It's not entirely obvious that you can transfer things you've learnt on the size of a marble to the size of to something the size of a person. So was it easy to take information you'd learnt on the small scale to the larger scale?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Doing scale model tests, people designing aircraft do this all the time. They'll put a small scale model of an airplane in a wind tunnel, and they'll learn how the aircraft works at that scale, and then they'll scale it up to the big Airbus or Boeing full-size aircraft. And we did the same thing. We were able to use what's called dimensional analysis to scale up the effects we saw at the small-scale cricket balls up to the bigger scale.
So we've established, though, then, that scaling is important and backspin is crucial, but... What about, there are planes delivering these bombs, so there must be something about the speed they're moving, the height that the bomb's actually dropped at, and so on.
The critical parameters are speed, the speed of the plane, height, the height that it's flying at, and how much you spin the bomb. And so for a given diameter, it turns out that if you do dimensional analysis, the speed squared divided by the diameter and g, the acceleration of gravity, is dimensionless. So that means that if you were to have a bomb which was twice as big, you would have to fly 40% faster, the square root of 2. And that's important to know, that scaling factor.
And so moving back to you, Hilary, just to conclude, I guess, so having done all these tests with Hugh, what were your final parameters to actually drop the bomb and explode the dam?
Yeah, so from our testing, we determined that we needed to drop it 350 metres away from the dam, going 180 miles per hour, flying at 60 feet and spinning the bomb at 800 rpm. It turned out that on our final run, the pilot decided to fly a little bit lower at 30 feet, so the bomb did hit a bit harder than anticipated, but it was a successful run. So like Barnes Wallace, we bounced a bomb and blew up a dam.
Hilary Costello and before her Hugh Hunt from the University of Cambridge taking us through the process of designing a large-scale bouncing bomb.